Again? Hello. Seems like a lot of energy flowing tonight, does it to you? It's like, whew, whoa. All right. So we're here this month starting a whole new theme, and the theme is there's only one thing going on. Can you guess what that is? Close. God. It's only one thing going on, or spirit. And, you know, I was thinking about how there are many ways to describe the path of awakening, but one of the ways that I really like is that the journey of awakening takes place as we release fear as the center of our gravity and as we move into faith as the center of our gravity. And if we do walk this spiritual path, the further we go in our work of transformation, the more we release what is untrue. I love that song that we are singing every week, "As I Let Go, I'm Healed and I Am Made Whole." So as we keep doing the work to release the untrue and to step into the true, we come to know the greater truth of our own divine identity. And we come to know our absolute, not only our oneness with God, but our expression as God. And I'm seeking to merge differences here tonight. And as we travel along that path, we will inevitably meet up with what in us wars with the truth of our divine identity, and we call those false beliefs. And if we will do the work to dispel the false beliefs, like resolutely to get over the untruth that is in us, then we will more and more merge into that place that I already identified as our divine identity. And the path is long, and it takes us through many twists and turns, but we're all going to the same place. This thing that I describe is absolutely the direction of this path that we are walking in religious science. And so if you walk it long enough, you're going to get there if you do the work. Is that good news? Yeah. All right, I think so too. And this little bit that I've just talked about, we'll be talking about more in the workshop that we're doing here on June 30th. So you'll hear more about that. But one of the false beliefs that we will encounter that I want to take on this month with you is something that is within us. We're born into it. It is subtle and profound. It shapes how we perceive ourselves. And it shapes how we perceive other people and how we engage with the world. It becomes what we project on our experiences, and it easily ultimately becomes how we see life. And that false belief is duality. And duality isn't a word that we talk about all the time, but what it means is the belief in two powers. The belief in two powers. That there is a power for good, and there is a power for evil. Now, I'll just say straight out that we don't have a devil in religious science. We do not have an entity of evil in religious science. There is good, and there is the absence of good. And so we don't coalesce evil. There's the evil that people do. We don't coalesce evil into an entity as some other spiritual systems do. But we play enough in the realm of duality that there's good and not good, and that can lead to a very separated and ultimately a very painful kind of life. And I want us to take on this false belief this month. Are you game? Oh, please say yes. Okay, good. So the belief in duality comes down into our human experience as the belief that there is this and that, that there is right and wrong, that there is dark and light, that there is heaven and earth, that there is divine and human, that there is either or. And the issue here is not that these things don't exist, they do, but the dualistic point of view sees them as separated and distinct. And when we fall into seeing things in terms of their opposites, as if they're separate and distinct, it becomes very easy, and I forgot the male and female, it becomes very easy to call one good and one bad. It's very easy from a dualistic point of view to get into a negative judgment on one side of the equation. And we easily run this game of good and bad inside of ourselves, or am I the only one? And if we've got it running inside of ourselves, it's going to be what we project out on other people. And just any day watching the news, you know, you can see this kind of mind at play. And it's easy to have it summon up our beliefs around this very thing. In its most spiritual sense, and this comes out of the Judeo-Christian tradition, the dualistic point of view is the belief that earth has fallen away from heaven, that the human has fallen away from the divine, that form is fallen away from spirit, that something happened, and actually we'll talk about the story, and something fell, and never the twain shall meet again. And how we know it within ourselves is even as we're reaching more and more to understand the good of who we are, and Science of Mind is based on all of that, the wholeness, completeness, and perfection of our individual being, when we're still in a dualistic frame of mind, what rises up in us is everything that wars with that truth that we're trying to claim. Do you know what I mean? And so we can go to the place of, I'm not worthy. I'm not good enough. Something messed up when I was created. I was trying to think of all my favorite miserable words on that. Flawed. Flawed. That was a big one. Flawed. I'm inadequate. And it's easy to have those things rise up within us. And as long as we have the good and the not good inside of ourselves, we're going to have pain. Because given the right stress, loss, diagnosis, whatever it might be, it's easy for us to fall back into the realm of not good. And yet our whole path is about understanding that there's only one thing going on, and it's spirit, and it's good. And so the spiritual truth, only one thing going on, what we have to understand is that the one became the two. The one became the two. And yet the two still have the one behind them. And our spiritual path is to make the two one again. We're going mystical tonight, okay? Please come with me. I've been listening to Michael Beckwith's CD called Transcendance. It's parts of his talks. You're familiar with Michael? Parts of his talks done to electronic dance music. It's pretty cool. And he says, I'm taking an adventure in paradise, and I'm taking you with me. So we're taking an adventure in mystical truth. I'm taking you with me. But what we want to understand is that there is a continuum, not a distinction, between the most invisible, cosmic, timeless, eternal reality called God and you right there in form. That it's a continuum from the most invisible to the most visible, and yet it's one thing. It is one thing. It is one thing. It's not two things. It's one. And this is the realization that we're after here. And Ernest Holmes says we live in a spiritual universe. I finally got it. After studying Science of Mind since 1980, I finally got it. I know what he means. There's one thing going on, and it's spirit. And so we're here this month after the realization of what I love to call the radiant truth of the One. And if I could, I would invoke here a flash of light that would remove all of the veils and would allow us to see the shining radiant truth of the One. Because it is the perception that we are journeying toward. It has at the heart everything that we study and that we talk about. It is our natural progression along the spiritual pathway in Science of Mind. And it is to see the seamless whole of creation and the oneness of all of life and the unity of all things. That's what it's about. And not just as a concept, although we start there, but as a felt reality, as something felt and seen not with the physical eyes, but with the spiritual eye, the eye that sees oneness, the oneness of things. So I would say that this awareness does begin as a concept. And I was just remembering, I knew about the oneness of life from studying the Transcendentalists, particularly Emerson. And yet it was coming into Terry Cole Whitaker's ministry and hearing the teachings of Science of Mind that I began to understand that the oneness, which did include me, was also an extremely personal experience between me and God. I don't know what she said. I wish I could remember. But there was one day when there was just an aha for me, and I advanced on the path in the direction of this thing that we're talking about here. So it begins as a concept. It begins as the concept that behind the many is the one. It begins as the understanding that oneness is the truth of all creation. So it begins as an idea. It begins as the understanding that there's only one problem, it's separation, and there's only one truth, and it's unity. And that in every single problem you experience, there's some kind of separation going on. You're separated from this, you've fallen into duality. There's separation from the truth of the one. And so it starts as a concept, but it's supported by our practice of it. Excuse me. It's supported by our hearing of the concept and seeking to understand it and then practicing knowing oneness in the midst of what looks like separation. And it's tricky because it's not something that you can see with the physical eyes. It's something that you have to perceive with your spiritual eye. And yet it is the essence and truth of our path. And if we keep practicing this for long enough, that no matter how estranged from somebody you feel, you remember the truth of oneness behind your relationship. That no matter how far away from the kingdom of spirit you feel, you actually remember that you're right with it and in it, and that there really is no place other to go than to be in God. Where would you go? I just have no idea. But if we practice it for long enough on a regular basis, we will start to feel what our minds have known or sought to know. And the barriers we will begin to release, and the veils will begin to drop. And suddenly this thing that I'm efforting to put words at becomes an abiding reality. And we slip into the awareness of oneness pretty much all the time. You know, that's the purpose of meditation. They always say the purpose of meditation, coming into oneness, is not sitting on your cushion. It's the way in which you practice the oneness everywhere else that you are. So anyway, that's another talk, isn't it? So I want to say that there is no need to rush, and there's really no way to make it happen, because it's a maturation process or a walking along the path, or, you know, just at the right time the veil begins to fall so that we see something different. But we can want it to happen, and we can practice the realization over and over and over again and make that strong within ourselves. This journey to oneness is the path we are walking. It is the path that we walk here. And where we're heading is full conscious awareness of our divine identity. That which God is, I am. That's where we're going. And I don't know any other further place to go, do you? I don't know that there's anything beyond that, actually. I think that's sort of it. Okay. So I want to, for tonight, call that the garden consciousness. Call it garden consciousness. And the garden is a beautiful symbol of creation, of God's creation. You know, you might think about, we've got some organic farmers in the room, and we have a landscape architect over there. And so we have people who work in gardens here. And the garden is just a beautiful symbol of God's creation, of harmony, of beauty, and peace. And I would love to have you start thinking about the garden that is your favorite kind of garden, the garden that is just, that speaks of heaven to you, that looks like heaven to you. So there is a quintessential story about the garden in the Judeo-Christian tradition, and of course it is a very symbolic story, and you know it well, and it is the story of Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. And I will tell you, in Science of Mind, that we have a metaphysical interpretation of the Bible. And that actually what we love, I'm speaking generally for all of us, what I love is the interplay between the literal storyline and the metaphysical meaning. And the story of Adam and Eve in the garden is wildly symbolic. And we could spend a month on that story, but we won't, because I would probably lose you out of the room. But maybe not. If you're interested, we could do a class. But here's the story. And so it has literal characters to it. It looks like it's in a location. There are things that take place. And yet it's all about our spiritual evolution. So here's the story. After God created the heaven and the earth, after the creation story, and by the way, God saw that it was very good. Good. Then God decides to create Adam. And he creates Adam out of the dust of the earth. And he sets him in the garden, which is eastward of Eden. I don't know what was westward of Eden, but the garden is eastward of Eden. And in the garden, he places two major trees. One is the tree of life, and the other one is the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And knowledge is the operative word there, the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he says to Adam, you can eat of all the trees of the garden, but not the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. And he said, on the day that you do, you will die. And just as an aside, when we fall into our dualistic point of view, we do die from the truth of oneness. Okay? So he then creates all of the creatures and all the animals, and he brings forth Eve from Adam's rib. And Adam and Eve are happy and naked and joyous and completely unconscious in the Garden of Eden. They are completely unconscious. The I am consciousness has not awakened in them. They are happy. They are innocent. And then the serpent comes along, and that's just another whole deep symbol, but the serpent comes along, and he tempts Eve with the possibility of the power of being wise, saying, if you eat of this tree of the knowledge of good and evil, you will become wise. And so Eve eats of the apple. She gets Adam to do it. They come to self-consciousness in the negative sense. They see that they are naked, they are ashamed, and they hide from God. And we do hide when we fall into our duality. And it is the hiding that tips God off that they've done exactly what he told Adam not to do. And so, yeah. So Adam blames Eve, and Eve blames the serpent. And so we get immediately in the Bible a picture of how we project error onto other creatures and things, not taking responsibility for our own actions. That's something else. And I do love that Eve gets Adam to do it, though, because women are often instigators of evolution. It's a good thing. So, but this is the first appearance of duality in consciousness in spiritual literature. This is where the duality shows up. In a way. And so God says this. This really caught my attention. I'd never paid attention to it before in this story. God says, behold, the man has become one of us to know good and evil. But lest he put forth his hand and take of the tree of life and eat and live forever. And then what seems like a quotation ends and it says, God sent them from the garden. So that's interesting. That God acknowledges that in the eating of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil, they have become godlike. But lest they eat of the tree of life and live forever in this dualistic perspective, they have to go from the garden. Now, Ernest Holmes has a really wonderful teaching, and he says, we are not punished for our sins, but by them. And I love the definition of sin as unskilled behavior. So we are punished not for our unskilled behavior, but by it as a consequence. And actually, the way this piece reads in Genesis to me, it is a consequence, not a punishment. You don't get, I mean, I know there are a bunch of curses, but in this one, I've ignored all of those. In this one place, it's like a consequence that because of this, you must go from this place of oneness. And so that's the story. You know, Adam and Eve go out into the world, and the whole human drama begins to unfold. So this is a wildly symbolic story. We could talk about every single thing in the story, but the main point is that it shows in our Judeo-Christian tradition the beginning of duality, or the idea, the story about the beginning of duality, and the belief in two powers, to see that that is what throws us out of the garden. that the minute we get into the two, we've fallen from the one. We've fallen from the one. Now, the Bible is not hospitable for everybody here, probably in the room, but it is. It can be seen metaphysically as the story of our spiritual evolution. Starting with the creation story, God saw that it was good. Adam and Eve, the belief in two powers. The Ten Commandments are all the earth plane laws to deal with the fact that we're dualistic. Then Jesus comes along with the one law of love and talks about oneness with the Father and our divine identity. And then the book of Revelation is this total psychedelic thing. And that reference will make sense for a song in a little bit. And it is the building of the holy temple of Jerusalem that is yourself. And so the whole Bible can be seen from as a story of our evolution from the one state of good into the full realization of the good as the truth of our being. So, and there is pain that has been evoked because of the literal level of interpretation of this story. All kinds of things. But again, we go for the metaphysical one. But the main pain comes from this idea that something has fallen away from God. That something has missed entirely. That it is not a part any longer of the kingdom. And we just don't believe that in Science of Mind. That's just not our particular philosophy. So the opportunity for us is to return to the garden consciousness. And in a very real way, we can't return to it, but we can ride the spiral up to a new realization of oneness. Because we'll never go back to that, to the innocence of that time, because we're aware. We are aware, but we can take the two-ness of duality and give birth to the awareness of oneness once again. So I'm going to stay at the mystic realm with you in this talk, and we're going to get more specific and human-related in subsequent talks this month. But I do want to share with you that a beautiful teaching about coming back to the truth of oneness comes out of the gospel according to Thomas. And there's a great book called The Mustard Seed that's been a friend of mine for so many years, so many decades now, written by Osho, who's also known as Rajneesh, a wild, crazy Hindu man who took the gospel according to Thomas, which is one of the Gnostic gospels, so it was found in the desert, hidden. Beautiful teachings of Jesus, very mystical. And here's the teaching. Jesus saw children who were being suckled. He said to his disciples, "These children are like those who enter the kingdom." The disciples said to him, "Shall we then, being children, enter the kingdom?" They thought, "Oh, great, we'll just be like children and enter the kingdom." And Jesus said to them, "When you make the two one, and when you make the inner as the outer, and the outer as the inner, and the above as the below, when you make the male and the female into a single one, so that the male will not be male and the female will not be female, then you shall enter the kingdom. When you make the two one, and when you make the inner as the outer, and the outer as the inner, and the above as the below, and when you make the male and the female into a single one, so that the male will not be male and the female will not be female, then you shall enter the kingdom." Very mystical teaching. It's about losing the separation by which we hold things, the separateness. So the children in the story are in a state of innocence and oneness, and we can't really go back to exactly that place because we have been born into the two-ness. We have been born into the knowledge of good and evil. We came from our parents and were born. We came from two parents and were born into the two-ness that is the awareness of this earth plane. We are born into the belief in rightness and wrongness, and we participate in that like crazy. And we make judgments all the time, or am I the only one? But we can let the two in us become the one. We can let the two, the perception of the two, give way to a knowing of the one. We can understand that anytime you bring the mind to something, the mind will separate and divide it. And that's very useful sometimes. When you bring the heart to something, it unifies. And so, you know, sometimes the mind is really good at analyzing and separating and is needed. And yet much of the healing that we need to do comes from engaging at the level of the heart in the awareness of oneness. If we bring our mind to something, we'll see differences and opposites. If we bring our heart to it, we'll come into the awareness of oneness. So Osho says, let the man in you and the woman in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. Let the man in you and the woman in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. And I would say, let heaven and earth in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. And let the spirit in you and the human in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. And I invite you to practice that awareness that these things that seem so opposite, let them meet in you and become a circle and a oneness. And we want to practice this perception of oneness and be able then to see when we fall into duality again, when we are separating, when we are estranging, when we are judging, when we are making something wrong. We need to see that when we claim our good, that there are sometimes things that rise up in our awareness. Let's be conscious of that. It's what rises up in our awareness. So let us see when we judge and call something wrong. Let's just bring awareness to it and keep practicing the oneness that is behind. It is to keep reminding ourselves of this radiant truth of the one behind everything that we see that looks so very different. Osho says, put the mind aside and look. Look without the mind. Be aware without the mind. See, and don't allow thoughts to stand as a screen between you and the universe. And he says that when you make the two one in you, you become the twice born. That from the one, you came into the two, and now you give birth to the one from inside yourself. And be the twice born. All right, so I invite you to close your eyes. And just let all of this settle. I think the best image is that image of the circle. So just take a moment and connect with your breath. Feel your in-breath and your out-breath. Let the in-breath and the out-breath in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. Let your breath be a slowly moving wheel at the center of which is the heart of God. And feel this heart in the center of the moving wheel merge with your own heart and just breathe the circle of the one. So that night and day in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. So that inward and outward in you meet and become a circle and a oneness. And breathing now into your heart center, let your heart center expand and become a garden. Exactly the garden that you would love to see, lush, if lush is your style, filled with whatever it is that speaks of the goodness of creation to you. Maybe flowers and trees and fruit, maybe pools of water, whatever it might be. Let your heart be the garden. And know that this garden is available anytime you choose to remember it and move there. And here is a poem from William Butler Yeats. Beloved, gaze in thine own heart. The holy tree is growing there. From joy, the holy branches start. And all the trembling flowers they bear. The changing colors of its fruit have dowered the stars with merry light. The surety of its hidden root has planted quiet in the night. The shaking of its leafy head has given the waves their melody and made my lips and music wed, murmuring a wizard song for thee. And so breathing now, feeling the essence of oneness, returning to the garden, the center of the one, of peace and joy and love. In the one, the two are resolved. And very gently and easily, when you're ready, open your eyes. And here's Dave Avani to sing for us.